KCN, Talk Line Communications Network Radio, America's number one Jewish program.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jay Booksbaum. You know me probably from wine and spirits, but I want to tell you something. Even though I'm in that area of expertise, you're about to hear from Rechama Bistritsky-Klapman, who runs MASS, Mothers and Fathers Aligned Saving Kids. They're in their 20th anniversary. They've got over 45,000 families that they've helped over the years. It's an amazing program. It's called Family Matters. And if you've got any issues with bullying or alcohol or substance abuse or any other kind of abuse, they're your place to go. I'm really excited to introduce you all to Rechama Bistritsky-Klapman here on Dev Brenner's Talk Line Communications Network every Thursday night at 9 o'clock. Listen to Rechama and Family Matters.
I'd like to welcome everybody back tonight to Family Matters. And this evening, we have on with us Hedy Rubel, who's an LCSW and has an RPT. Hedy, I'd like to welcome you. Are you there with us?
I am.
Hi, thanks for joining us tonight. Hedy's a therapist and a school professional in a right-wing yeshiva right here in Brooklyn. Hedy has a private practice in the Five Towns. Anyone that wants to reach Hedy Rubel can call MASC at 718-758-0400. And we have on with us a mom that reached out to MASC in 1999. She had called. I'd like to welcome Hinda. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
So we're going to start first with Hinda. And I remember when you called the MASC helpline in 1999, your daughter was 16 years old at the time. What made you call MASC originally? And can you share, where did you hear about us at that time?
Okay, well, it was such a long time ago, so I hope my memory serves me well. She was 16. She was in high school in the town where we lived, and she was having struggles along with half of her class, and got to a point where they had a lot of hashkafa questions that kind of weren't dealt with, and she was labeled off the derech. So I think before she was kicked out, the famous Jewish Observer came out with all those kids at risk, you know, articles and everything, and I believe that's where I saw the ad for MASC. And, you know, before I called MASC, I'm calling, you know, different people who wrote different articles and whatever. Didn't really lead to much help for me. But I called the MASC hotline, and they had such, you know, a good listening ear. And it was such a help and comfort that somebody understands where you're coming from and understands the frustration. And at that time, they also had an online parent support group, which was major, major helpful to all of us, because we were all parents going through similar things from all over the world. And we were able to relate to each other, give each other chizuk. But the main thing was that MASC allowed us, through this forum, to, you know, talk to each other and give each other chizuk that we're not the only ones going through this. Because when you don't have anyone to talk to, when you don't have a MASC hotline to talk to, or you don't have the parent support group, you think you're all by yourself. And it's frustrating, but it was so, so helpful. So after she got kicked out of the first school. We had to send her to another school in another city. She was only there for 3 months, got kicked out there, came back home, and she was in her third high school, which was not a happy experience, but she graduated.
Let me ask you, Hinda, just for our listeners to understand and get a picture of your family, your husband's a professional, you have how many children?
Three.
And what number is your child, Kanahara?
She was the oldest.
She was the oldest. So when the first time that she was asked to leave a school, how was that for you and your husband? Were you on the same page? Were you both thinking the same way on how to deal with it? What was the reason she was asked to leave the school at the time? Can you briefly describe that and just talk more about how was it for everyone else in the home while she was being expelled from her yeshiva?
My daughter was labeled as off the derech. She was asking off the derech questions, and they, you know, expelled her from school. And my husband and I were on the same page as far as wanting her to go to that school. That was the school in our town that we were most comfortable with, hashkafically. And, you know, but as far as being on the same page with what to do, where to go, how to handle it, we were confused. We were frustrated because there was no one to talk to about it. So that's why, you know, MASC was just such a helpline that, you know, we were talking to people who can relate to what we're talking about, who know what we're talking about, and we felt like we're not alone. And that's a big help right there.
Thank you, Hinda, for having our listeners understand how MASC is able to help and support you back in 1999 and through the years. I would like to touch on a topic that you brought up, which was your daughter had questions. And I'd like to ask Hetty Rubel, who's with us tonight. Hetty, can you talk about what happens when girls in the school you work at, or your colleagues, I know, discuss this in about other schools, what happens when girls have questions, or boys for that matter? Right. Just the idea of asking questions. Can you elaborate on that, please, Hetty?
So they are feeling very stifled, and they're feeling very confused. And very often, you know, a lot of kids will be able to find somebody in school or outside of school that they can approach. I think the greater problem is that even when they're feeling that they can't even address whatever is bothering them at home. And Hinda, it sounds like you and your husband were very, very in tune to your daughter. And, you know, you were struggling and didn't know what to do, but what you did do was that you reached out. And if you know, many, many parents are just too afraid to, because they are so afraid of the labels, and they are so afraid of shidduchim for this child and for their other children, that, you know, that they just remain in a state of quiet confusion. And what happens to the child there, the child's needs aren't getting addressed because, you have so many layers over here. In my practice, I find that the parents who are open and willing to work, you know, work with me and work with the system, those are the kids who end up, you know, doing very well, because they are validated, and they are, just like you didn't feel understood, you know, just think of the layers of your daughter not feeling understood.
Right, right.
You know, and parents are adults already. So the level of confusion that kids feel, you know, when you're in a system that just doesn't feel right, when you're in a school where you feel like you just don't fit,
you're not in the box, and the school expects you
right.
to be in the box.
You don't fit in the cookie cutter mold. That was the expression back in that time. But I took it a step further where I wanted to have my daughter's needs met, and they weren't being met and addressed mm-hmm. in school. So I had Shiurim at my house every other Shabbos just for her class. And we had different speakers, and the class came, and I said, you know, there you go. You ask whatever you want. And that went on for a year, and I even was asked to open it up to the entire school, and I said, no.
Wow.
It's just for my daughter's class. If the other parents want their girls to have it, then they ought to have their own. This is just for her class. Then on Sunday mornings, I took my daughter to an Eish HaTorah rabbi, and boom, ask whatever you want. So if the questions didn't get answered, and actually the school started to have a deep question box they put in the room for the kids to put in their questions, and somebody didn't like the questions the girls were asking, so the deep question box disappeared. So, you know, sometimes parents have to think outside of the box and get their children what they need outside of the school, too, to help validate them and who they are and where they are and help them get what they need.
What you did
yes.
was absolutely amazing for your daughter.
You really did, and you were amazing. I remember all those years that we were in touch while she was struggling. You reached out. You were on our email support list. You called
awesome.
Every time she was asked to leave a school. You were there to help support her, even though it was painful for you as a parent. It didn't paralyze you. You stood up and you said, I'm here for you. And
the paralysis, the paralysis comes, I think, when parents, first of all, don't have a support, don't have anyone to talk to, and also the busha of the embarrassment of, you know, having a child who is kicked out or whatever. You know, parents don't want to come out of the closet, so to speak. They don't want anybody to know.
And
but
think
the truth
about
is,
how the effect of that on the child.
Right.
The child is struggling to begin with. And then when you
correct.
Add the added layer that, you know, the parent is embarrassed by the child or can't
correct.
Deal with it herself, themselves,
mm-hmm.
You know, it just, it exacerbates the problem. Another aspect of it is how do we educate the schools, the right-wing yeshivas, that, you know, that we need a little more openness to be in tune to, you know, to our kids' needs.
Correct. I mean, I tried having conversations with the school that, you know, here these kids are asking, I mean, kids like my daughter had the guts enough to ask a question that maybe other kids are thinking, but they wouldn't dare ask, but my daughter did. So I talked to administrators and said, any questions that any teenager can think to ask, there's an answer in the Torah for it. There's an answer in the Torah for everything.
And
so,
it's okay. And it's okay,
and it's okay to
ask.
Right.
So I would like to just add to that Torah Mesorah, Agudah, the Yeshivas, JLI, Chabad, the Hasidic schools, they are all on board. They all are working towards having questions answered
correct.
Today
yeah.
to
yeah.
students, different than all the years before. MASC is in its 20th year. We celebrated our 20th anniversary in February. And over the 20 years, things have changed. We've lost so many children from overdoses in Klal Yisrael. But one positive thing that's changed is that schools are hiring therapists, school social workers, psychologists. They're working with therapists. MASC is in 5 yeshivas that we had interns in. There are other agencies out there that are in many yeshivas. The yeshivas we service were in Flatbush, Brooklyn, and Crown Heights, but there are many other organizations that everybody needs to hear. All my listeners, just know you cannot say the yeshivas aren't doing anything, because I will tell you, and Hetty, you can say it as well, that we've watched the turn. The yeshivas are working hard to keep the kids in the schools, to keep the kids' questions answered. Hetty, would you like to share your thoughts on that, please?
Well, I have been in a very right-wing yeshiva for the last 24 years. And you know, I must tell you that the school that I am at, the principal totally funds me himself, so that I will be there for the kids. But not only am I there for the kids, I'm also there for the administration and the teaching staff. You know, when you work in a school, it's very, very different from your private practice. So a lot of times, the work that I do is kind of sensitizing the teachers, like if a teacher, you know, thinks a kid is, quote, unquote, a bad kid, to help them understand that there's something underlying that. There's some hurting that's going on that's causing the behavior. No behavior is in a vacuum. So part of the work is working with school staff, but a huge part is working with the parents. You know, not all parents are like you and your husband, Hinda, where you sought out help, where you said, you know, we need to figure out how to do this, and we don't have to be stuck in our Dalit Amos and do it by ourselves. So a lot of times, when I identify a kid who really needs much more than you can possibly get in the school system, you know, I try to walk, you know, hold the parents' hands and get them to work with a therapist outside of school. And again, the kids who get that intervention are the ones who do better. The parents who will say, my kid looks a little different from everybody else, but I'm still going to love them and I'm still going to do what I need to do.
Right. But my mantra was, doing nothing is not an option.
Right.
Totally not an option. Got to do something.
But that's what makes you unique, because a lot of people just want to shove it under the carpet.
Oh,
it'll
no.
My child
that'll just
will.
Make it worse, I think.
Well, that is what makes it worse.
Yes.
You know, I mean, a lot of times I run into situations where I can almost predict the kids that may go off the derech. And I don't mean to scare parents, but you really have to find the words to open them up to. You can't minimize this. You know, your kid is telling you something. They're telling the school something. They're telling you that I'm confused or I'm hurting or there's something going on. Listen to me. That's what the kids are telling us.
They're acting out because they're screaming some kind of a message that you don't know what it is, and you have to find out. You're right.
Right, and we called it MASS. When I named the organization MASS 20 years ago, it was because we all wear a mask. We are in denial when our child is suffering silently inside. We only get to see it when we see outside behaviors for many. And 20 years ago, we needed to take off the mask of denial in the community. So mothers and fathers aligned.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Did you want to say something, Hetty?
No, I just said we still need to take more masks off.
Okay, we are all doing our best.
We're working on it.
And trying. We are all working on it. And for those that are just coming on and listening in to Family Matters tonight, we are on with Hetty Rubel, who has an LCSW, and she's a play therapist, which is something I'd like to ask you about, Hetty. Hetty, it starts really young, you just said. We know that parents don't always know about what's going on until the kids are in fourth, fifth grade, when they start struggling, whether it's school-related, learning disabilities, starting to learn Gemara, in fifth grade, you know, getting towards bas mitzvah and bar mitzvah. So it does start young. Can we talk about play therapy? What age do you do play therapy with?
Okay, so I am a licensed child-centered play therapist. And what that means is that I use a lot of expressive arts to help kids express themselves, because as you know, kids can come in and they don't necessarily feel safe or want to talk about what's going on. So by doing play therapy, they express it through their play. I have a specialty that's very effective for kids who've been through trauma, and it's called sand play therapy, where kids build worlds in the sand, and each world has tremendous symbolism behind it, and through what they show me, I'm able to understand a little bit about what might be going on in the child's world. I think that now teachers are becoming more in tune to the kids because as, you know, we talked about labeling kids before, I think that they're recognizing more and more that that parents need to be brought on board because there's something going on. And really that's how I get my referrals. I get referrals from a lot of school principals, from people in the community, and this expertise is not, there are other child-centered play therapists, but it not every other therapist is a play therapist. And that's how kids come to me, and they work through their anger and their frustration, we identify what further needs to be done. Today, I would say the biggest reason that kids are coming into therapy is for anxiety. The level of anxiety that kids are experiencing is beyond huge.
Yes, Hetty. Thank you for mentioning that. At MASC, in all the 20 years, we have never had as many calls for anxiety this year and last year, the last 2 years, like we had in the last 20 years. So anxiety
I think since September 11th, that's when I identified that more and more kids were coming in. But now it's I would say, 9 out of 10 kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
And all ages, starting with very young kids to, adolescents and teenagers, because I think that we're living in a very anxious generation. There's so much going on. I think that it starts with above. It starts with parents who are anxious.
And the parents are overwhelmed. Both parents
right.
are working. Some parents are working two jobs. Kids come home. Nobody's home many times. And we cannot fault parents. Things are very expensive. Tuition, school, et cetera, camps. Braces, and it's just, some
and
people.
And a lot of social pressure.
A lot of social pressure. Absolutely. Hinda, I want to bring it back to Hinda. You said that she's your oldest child, Hinda. And tell us about your younger kids. Did you have any issues at all with the younger kids as a result of your daughter acting out at that time?
Well, my middle child, saw and heard what was going on, and she was a different kind of child in that when she saw conflict, she just, took 10 steps back and stayed out of the way. But my youngest was very young at the time, and I worried about how it was affecting him. So that is also another issue, in a household where you worry about your other children and how is this affecting your other children. So,
we call it the sibling effect that we worry about, because a lot of younger children, other children in the home, see the parents focused on that one child that's struggling and a lot of negative behaviors going on, and you're focusing on the child with negative behaviors. So the great, wonderful, terrific, studious child says, hey, 1 minute, nobody sees me. They're only seeing the one that does bad. Well, guess what? Now it's my turn.
Or that, let's say, you turn your head if your oldest child does X or Y, and you turn your head for a minute, and you can't fight about everything, that's for sure. And then your younger children say, hey, how come I don't get to do that?
Right.
Right, because we do give longer rope sometime for the child. Right, Hetty?
Right. So when I work with parents, I don't believe that you can work with children in a vacuum. I work with the parents also. And one of the things, you know, one of the things that we talk about is to educate your children that you get what you need, and some have bigger appetites than others. If you have a pie, some people need two pieces and some people only need one. So you get what you need. You might need more of something else. Your sibling needs more of this. It's hard for kids to get.
Right. Well, and also having a background in education, I did a lot of reading, a lot of, you know, educators, and Dr. Rick Lavoie was one of the things he talks about is fairness. What fairness is not. Fairness is not giving each child the same thing. Fairness is giving each child what they need when they need it.
Right.
That's it. And he, yes. He came to my town several times and he spoke. And one of the pieces that he read is called Welcome to Holland, which is an excellent piece done by a woman talking about what it's like, you know, to be a mother of a special needs child. And the piece really, you know, says, oh, when your baby's born, you have all these hopes and dreams for them, like we all do. And then one day you see that, you know, you're not going to France, you're going to Holland, and you're disappointed.
Right.
And then you realize, I have to speak a different language. I'm going to meet new people. You know, you have to learn how to deal with living
piece.
In Holland.
Right, that's why that mask.
It's a great piece.
Masks
it's a wonderful
mine.
Piece. And it applies to this situation as well. That, you know,
you
even though we have hopes and dreams for our
Right,
I'm
and
sorry?
You have to, and then it's just not the way you thought it was going to be. So you
Correct.
Have to, you can't
right.
turn that child and put them into your box. You have to,
right.
You know, revise your own thinking and your own.
That's right. You have to be the one to readjust.
Time.
You're the adult. You have to readjust, and you know you can't. What is it? You can't direct the wind, but you can adjust the sail, and
right.
that's how it is.
Right, and on the mask helpline, we say if you change the music in your home, your child's dance steps can change. So whatever you're doing and it's not working, we recommend that you get professional guidance, try something new,
right.
that you are being guided by a professional, and then hopefully your child can get the help they need and they can change whatever negative behaviors into positive ones. So, yeah, that's very, very important message
right.
for all our listeners. And our number is 718-758-0400. Masks Helpline is open from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. and is confidential. We will not share any of your information. You can call anonymous and describe what's going on, and I have a very amazing staff that's with MASC for almost 17 years already, and you can call and speak to one of the people that are here ready to help you get to where you must get to with your family, whomever, the loved one that is struggling, whether it's an addiction, whether it's trauma, whether it's gambling, whether it's alcohol or drugs, mental health, schizophrenia, whatever depression that might be going on in your loved one's life, take our number, write it down. You may need it for your own child, your spouse, or yourself. You may need it for your neighbor. Give it to a neighbor that you see that they may be struggling with a loved one. Someone you sit next to in shul may need the number 718-758-0400. We answer the helpline till 2 hours before Shabbos, Motzei Shabbos, all day Sunday, and every day from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. We're on with a mom, Hinda, who's describing her journey with her daughter that was asked to leave 3 high schools, but we did not yet share where her daughter's up to today. And I would like to just go straight to you, Hinda, now, and go back to your lovely daughter that graduated 12th grade, went on, and can you bring us up to date on where she is today, please?
Okay. So, actually, the last year in high school, she kept saying, I'm not going to SEM, and I learned to just keep my mouth shut, and she'll realize all of her friends are going to SEM, and, you know, that's what happened, and then she decided she's going to SEM, but she picked the SEM, mm-hmm. not me. And you have to know your customer, too, you know. And the choice she made was a place that deals with hashkafa, which is what she needed. So she picked the place where she could be the brightest star in the seminary, and that's exactly what she was. And she's still close with the head, you know, of that seminary, even though it's closed now. But she's still in touch with him, and she went on to Shanabet, to another seminary. So she was in Eretz Yisrael for 2 years. And, you know, if I would have picked the seminary for her, you know, she may have been back home. Who knows? But she picked it.
Can I just add something? Can I just mm-hmm. What you did was so amazing because you gave her control. And by giving her control, she knew what she needed. You couldn't have known what she
yes.
did as well. She did.
She did.
So, again, you were a parent who deserves so much credit for what you did do.
Well, it wasn't easy, I have to say. It wasn't easy. It's like you close your eyes and, you know, take that step and let her do it.
And pray a lot.
Yeah, daven. And the truth is, I also took things a step, you know, in another direction in my town, and we formed a committee. And this committee brought in speakers from many, many different cities, and they met with the schools and the rabbis of the shuls, and they talked about these issues, all kinds of issues, parenting, chinuch, shalom bias, and, you know, those are all 3 interconnected. So we're trying to, like, educate the educators, educate the parents together for the same benefit of the children. So
right,
it's kind of trying to transform
that.
A whole community.
You really made an amazing difference,
right.
and your kids saw what you did. That's the whole beauty of it.
Well, I hope so.
I'm sorry.
I hope
yes,
so.
Hinda, we do that here.
Can you tell
in
us
New
about
York.
Your daughter now?
Oh, yes, sure. So, Baruch Hashem, she is... She came back from seminary. She went to nursing school. She got a master's in nursing, so she is a... adult nurse practitioner, hospitalist, married, and has 2 beautiful children, and she gets it. She gets it now. So Baruch Hashem, you know, it's the fruit takes a long time to grow and sprout, but when the fruit comes out, it's beautiful and it tastes delicious. But,
and you really worked hard to plant...
Well, it's your children, and you can't give up on your children. Never, ever give up. Never, ever close the door. I was invited to speak to someone about with parents with struggling children, just as somebody who had experience with it. And the my opening statement was, whatever the stewardess says on the plane about the oxygen mask, that's my opening line. You're traveling with a young child, you put your mask on first before you put on your child's mask, because you have to help yourself and you have to get what you need, like calling mask. I had to get what I needed, the support from mask and the parent support group through mask, in order to help my child.
So we're back with Hedy Rubel. Hedy, I wanted to ask you about being in a school, right-wing yeshiva. How do you make the parents understand what prevention message do you offer to parents that they understand the importance of getting the help they may need for their young children when you see it at a very young age, like you mentioned earlier in the show? And what message do you give to the children to be able to come and get the help they may need and ask for it? What is that message that they get, the students?
Okay, so fortunately, I'm in a school that obviously believes in offering intervention early. So in my particular yeshiva, and I know that it's very unusual, kids can't wait to come to see me, or any of my interns. I have three interns who work with me. The message is, I hear you, and more often than not, parents, I will not see a child without parental consent. And years ago, there was a lot of times where parents would not consent to having, the child go to the guidance counselor's office. I'm the guidance counselor in school. Now it's like parents tell each other. And so there's definitely a more openness in society than there was 10 years ago, that's for sure, and more than there was 20 years ago. And I think that parents see that when their kids feel better, they are more successful in school. And when they are more successful in school, it's going to carry over. I think kind of the proof is in the pudding. It's, you can't convince a parent to say yes, but you can give them choices. Ultimately, if a parent chooses not to because they are so insecure or worried or anxious, I guess anxious is the closest term. You can't make them and you can't push them. And I think my style is very giving people choices and helping people to grow on their own, whether it's the parent or the child.
Thank you, Hetty. Mom, listening to Hetty, how does that make you feel that in ninth grade your daughter was asked to leave a school? Thinking back to elementary, do you remember any behaviors possibly that may have been a red flag now that you look back?
Behaviors that my daughter was exhibiting that should have been a red flag, you mean, to
yes.
us and the school?
Yes.
The truth is, at school, it was mainly at school where she wanted to ask her hashkafa questions. At home, the only thing I saw was the top button became mm-hmm. unbuttoned. That was really what I saw.
What about friends? Did you see any change there?
She only had 10 girls in her class, so
uh-huh.
Half of the class were, friends with each other and had the same hashkafic issues, same thing.
So the reason that I asked,
and were they all asked to leave?
Oh no.
So nope. Why your daughter?
Because she was brave enough to verbalize the questions that other people were asking and didn't say anything. And she, like her mother, I guess, had to ask the question and, because I want to know. And that's such a valid, it's human nature. You have a question about something, you want the answer, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
It's
but on
healthy.
The other hand, I just
it's
want to
healthy.
Add something.
Uh-huh.
On the other hand, if your child is in eighth grade and they are in a yeshiva that isn't, you see that child asks different questions from everybody else or maybe is dressing a little different.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I do with my eighth grade parents is that instead of the school telling them this school's not for you, I have a discussion with them about what's the best place for your child and where is your mm-hmm. child going to grow the most.
Right. Oh, that's
now,
healthy. Yes.
Again, this is the situation. If you're expecting to put a circle in a square, it's not
correct.
Going to work.
That is
so
correct.
Therefore, doing what's in your child's best interest and not because you want them to be at a certain hashkafa or a certain,
right.
Type, that could really make all the difference. And I think that I've really helped a lot of kids who've ended up in different schools because mm-hmm. they found the right place for themselves.
Well, that's where the parent has to be intellectually honest with themselves. And, you know, even though you have your own needs, let's say what your need is doesn't fit the child. Right, it doesn't fit the child. And that's where you have to be intellectually honest and say, okay, my child, and I remember saying this to administrators at the school, you know, if you talk to 16-year-old kids, like, do you expect them to be on the same madriga? You're at the age of 40-something.
Right.
You're
right.
Barking up the wrong tree because it took you 40-something years to get to your madriga. You can't expect
right.
a 16-year-old to be on your madriga. So that's
Absolutely.
Not realistic either. It's baby steps in the right direction.
Absolutely. I want to thank Hetty Rubel, who was able to give us her time tonight. I know that you have an appointment, Hetty. So what is your last message this evening for parents, for our listeners, please, before you go?
To do what Hinda did, to reach out when you're struggling and not just take no for an answer. And also to be in tune to your child. If your child wants to be more modern, then listen to them because the consequences – by forcing them to be something that they can't or don't want to be is, you know, can be much more damaging.
So if you want to reach Hetty Rubel, call 718-758-0400. And before we say goodbye to Hetty, I just want to mention, Hetty will be having a support group for young adults who lost a parent or a sibling. Please call MASC and we can arrange for your young adult from age 14 to 19, male or female. So call MASC and we will give you more information on the MASC support group that will be facilitated by Hetty Rubel. Thank you again and good night, Hetty. Thank you and good Shabbos.
Rahama, thank you very much for having me, and it really was a pleasure participating in this.
Thank you, and I hope to have you on again.
Take
so
care,
we're bye-bye. Back. With that, I would like to introduce a mechanech who is here with me in the studio tonight talking about family matters and questions on Hashkafa. Hinda spoke about her daughter having questions in school. And I'd like to ask you, as a Rebbe, if you can just address the last 20 years that you've been in that role of being a Rebbe in a yeshiva, elementary age, high school age, mesifta age. I'm wondering, from 20 years ago to today, how have those questions changed? Are they more? Are they less? Can you elaborate, please?
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Over the last 20-plus years, Chinuch has evolved both in the schools and at home because we have different organizations in many, many different communities that are servicing both the parents like MASC, as we know, as well as other organizations that are there to help the parents and the students and guide them with their questions. 20-plus years ago, we didn't have any of these resources. We only had the children were in the school. Many of them were uncomfortable approaching their Rebbe, the Mora, and asking these questions that they might have felt out of place. They might have felt embarrassed, and they didn't feel they'd be comfortable asking these questions. Nowadays, we do have different relationships with the students where they're able to ask questions about all different types of social issues, and as well as family matters and things that are going on at home. In the schools nowadays, most yeshivas, schools that are out there, have a professional or more who are trained to work with the youth, the students, the teenagers, as well as the elementary age kids, to work with them to identify problems that are going on. The ultimate goal is, of course, for them to connect to Hashem, not to feel that they are an outcast or uncomfortable, but they should feel that their Rebbe, their Mora, is someone who can help them connect to Hashem and their questions can be answered, and they can find the proper help if needed, and direction and guidance.
So when you say connect to Hashem, to connect to God, if a child in elementary age child has questions, they may not ask that question until high school. So it's sort of compounded daily over the years that they have that question. So when they get to high school age, 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade, sometimes there are behaviors that come out that are really because of their unanswered questions.
That's exactly true. There, for many years, they've been walking around with questions, and I've met adults that have been walking around for many years with questions that they never felt they can get answers, and all of a sudden they find a rabbi or a teacher somewhere that has the answers, who can relate to them, understand not only where the what their question is, but where they're coming from, what their perspective is. So nowadays, I think children, as young adults, teenagers, feel that they're empowered to approach somebody that they develop a connection with, who is their leader, their mentor very often, and can direct them and answer their questions. Then they feel that their hashkafa maybe can go in the right direction. They shouldn't feel that they're uncomfortable, and they're not following in the footsteps of their parents and or older siblings. They have the ability to find out, ask questions and look for guidance. And once they understand what perspective is from the Torah and what Hashem, so to speak, wants for them, then they're empowered to go forward.
So being a teacher for many, many years in a right-wing, different yeshivas, mainstream right-wing yeshivas, schools, I'm wondering, has the message from the school's point of view to parents' tolerance in school changed also over the years, that they are working with the kids? Do kids know that it's okay now to ask those questions?
I believe the schools want the children to ask questions as opposed to just veering off the path. We have the concept of at-risk children, because there's so many more things from today's world. We're advanced as opposed to 20 plus years ago. Now with the internet and smartphones and everything that exists, the children can search for anything they want. They have to understand on the chinuch level, the reason the schools don't want them to have smartphones and internet access, openly, is because the fact there's so many dangers out there. Many schools try to address this issue with gatherings and teachings and explaining to parents. But again, it's not they're trying to tell everything that's forbidden. They're trying to protect the children and the families. Very often if one child has a smartphone, they're sharing that. They're sharing what we'll call the outside world and, in disturbances that are out there to children who are not prepared for this. They don't know right from wrong. And therefore, they're searching on their phone or the internet, and they're leading themselves off to terrible paths, dangerous situations in their lives. And therefore, the schools are accepting to a point, but they have to continue to educate the parents, staff, and the students about what's out there. It's never success in life to tell people everything is forbidden, everything's usur, because at the end of the day, everyone wants to search. Why? What's so bad about it? They're going to continue to look. Therefore, it's much better to educate them and work with the parents, staff, and the students to understand what the dangers are out there, and hopefully to go together and make things that are, put them on the right path.
When a child is expelled from school, schools don't do that lightly. I know that we had a call recently where they needed to have a child in elementary school expelled for having an iPhone. And I know that it was a very, very painful decision. And they consulted with their rabbis of the school. And no matter what, it's painful at the end of the day. Parents get the phone call, called into school, saying that their child can't, finish seventh grade. Now what? Where are they going to send their child? So when a school says no iPhone, no smartphone, when a school says no TV, we're hurting our own families when we don't adhere to the school's rules, the school that we as adults picked for our child to attend. So we need to know it's so painful for every parent who gets that phone call, whether it's being asked to leave camp, school. You know, there are kids that bring two phones, one they keep in their pocket, other one they hand in the morning, and they pick up at the end of the day. We're hurting them because that phone in the pocket, if they go to the bathroom and somebody says, I wonder if tonight when I get home, I look up this homework and another child hears it innocently in the bathroom, in the hallway, in the recess, wherever they may be playing, says, what do you have to wait for tonight? Let me Google it right now. Then the child gets into trouble. Then they get asked to be kicked out of school. And it's because they're helping a friend. So it's very confusing then. And it's breaking the rules of the school. And we need to realize giving it to our family members in elementary or high school where the rule says no, we're hurting our own child.
It's an excellent point, and I would say that the parents are responsible. You know, when they place a child in a school, boys or girls school, wherever that might be, there are rules. The schools very often will make it clear from day one, we don't, you know, parents should not have TVs in their house or internet or iPhones for their children in school. And therefore, the parents' response, when a child is sent out of school for having an iPhone, the child wasn't the one doing something wrong very often. It was the parents who purchased the phone, who provided the phone for the child. And therefore, they have to keep their eyes open to and understand what situation. We're responsible as mechanchim, as well as parents, to put our children in situations they can succeed. By setting the wrong tone or sending them to the wrong place where they're not prepared to succeed, therefore, we're failing as parents and mechanchim. The schools are doing what they feel is their message, which is that there are dangers out there with the internet and the smartphones, and the parents should be careful how they conduct themselves. And it's okay to say no to your child and provide a regular phone for them if you feel that's necessary, as opposed to a smartphone. The schools have rules for a reason, and we should put the child in a position where they can follow the rules and they should succeed in the school and not be sent out. And therefore, now you're setting the kid back many steps, because another school might not want to take this child because they're already sent out of one school. So it's a negative connotation.
And I don't want any of our listeners tonight to feel that if their child was asked to leave a school because they had questions, or their child was asked to leave a school or camp because they had a smartphone or anything else that the school may have made a rule that was broken. I don't want parents tonight to feel that mask in any way is saying that they were right just to do that, unless it was done with the rabbi, with the parents understanding, with everybody speaking on the same page for the benefit of the child. We know that there are many, many kids over the years that have been thrown out of school that never turned back. They never got past ninth grade. They were on the streets. They were doing drugs and alcohol, gambling, or however they may have had trauma to them in the school system. And we need to do everything we can to remember, to realize that each of us on our own need to partner with the school to tell them what may be going on in our home so that the school can work with each family, which means if there is a divorce, if there is someone that's ill in the family, Lo-Elaine, if the child may have been molested, whatever it is, it doesn't matter what it is. The earlier you go to the school to say, we need to partner with you, you have my child all day in the school, please help us, the earlier you do that, the better of a chance your child has, and then they know you're working with them. Can you tell us about your experience with partnering with parents, yes, partnering, or parents not have been doing that over the years from your experience, and how it's hurt children in your experience, please?
Well, often if a parent does, works with the teachers, the Rebbe, the Mora, as well as the administration of a yeshiva, they have a chance to understand what the situations are in a situation where if the parents aren't married, or if the parents, the kids going to several homes, rotates between parents, if the family has going through other stress, whether it's a sick relative, then the Rebbe, the teacher, has to know this, because they should be a little more sensitive, whether it's doing homework or showing up late to class, or even falling asleep during class. There might be outside situations that are affecting the child in class. It's very important for everyone to work together. The kids in school, approximately 35, 40 hours a week, that's a good portion of their chinuch. But the other end is they're at home. And the Rebbe must know, the teacher in the administration, the menahal of the yeshiva must know if there's a situation going on, and therefore they can help them to deal with it. Otherwise, you're giving a chance that this kid's going to go undetected, and therefore it's going to be negative to him.
So there's so much to talk about on this topic, and I want to thank you, Rebbe. I want to thank Hinda again. I want to thank Hedy Rubel and our listeners tonight. We are going to be on every Thursday night from 9 to 10 p.m. You can call MASC at 718-758-0400. You can call Anonymous. Give the number to your neighbor, someone you sit next to in shul. Maybe you need it for yourself. Call MASC. If you need a naloxone, Narcan training, free kit for overdose protection, please call MASC, 718-758-0400. And we'll continue all these important topics next week on Family Matters. Thank you, good night, and have a beautiful Shabbos.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jay Booksbaum. You know me probably from wine and spirits, but I want to tell you something. Even though I'm in that area of expertise, Rachama Bistritsky Klapman, who runs MASC, Mothers and Fathers Aligned Saving Kids, they're in their 20th anniversary. They've got over 45,000 families that they've helped over the years. It's an amazing program. It's called Family Matters, and if you've got any issues with bullying or alcohol or substance abuse or any other kind of abuse, they're your place to go. I'm really excited to introduce you all to Rachama Bistritsky Klapman here on Dev Brenner's Talk Line Communications Network every Thursday night at 9 o'clock. Listen to Rachama and Family Matters.
In case you missed our interview with Yoli Friedman, CEO of Credit Capital, you can still take advantage of their unique services as featured on the radio. Whether you're looking to invest in a business, do some construction on your home, or repay high-interest debt, Credit Capital can assist you with up to $250,000 at 0% interest from 12 to 21 months. How do they do this? Traditional loans require you secure their money with either collateral or at least 2 years of income statements. Credit Capital will utilize your personal credit to apply for personal credit from popular banks such as Chase, Bank of America, Capital One, and others to secure your credit. Credit Capital is not a credit repair service, but helps you if you have made timely payments, even if you have a low score, to obtain funds for your personal or business use. They've helped hundreds of people in the community and would love to help you. For more information and a free consultation, please call 212-321-0333. That's 212-321-0333 or online at creditcapitalny.com. Mention this program for a 10% discount. That's 212-321-0333. Credit Capital to help you.
KZN, Talk Line Communications Network Radio, America's number one Jewish program.